And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm your host, Javalani LaFall. Local farmers markets are great for finding fresh fruits and vegetables and spices. But the man we're about to meet was wandering around area farmers markets and said to himself, you know, this is quality produce at a good price, but I like meat. So joining us now is Nathan Jones, who likes meat, co-founder of Ag Local, a technology company that has actually created a platform to create new markets for animal farmers who want to connect with meat buyers and distributors. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Now, when you founded Ag Local, Nathan, did you ask yourself, why in the home of steaks and burn-ins and pulled pork did no one think of this before me?
I did. That's the exact thought I had, actually. Got on the internet and Googled this, and I found it almost astounding that, you know, there wasn't some outlet on the web that facilitated something like this. So that immediately, you know, inspired me to come up with this idea and get moving.
Your tagline is power to the meat lover. How did you come up with that?
We were sitting around not long after I founded the company. We were sitting around, myself and a couple of the early employees and the co-founder, and we're saying, like, this is something that's, you know, really emotional. You know, it's meat, you know. So
it's really emotional. It's meat.
it's emotional, you know. It attracts that primal kind of emotion. So, you know, why do we stand out and say something about ourselves is very bold that, you know, for the most part goes against the current prevailing winds in that most people are about, in the locavore movement especially, about vegetables and these other things. Why don't we just say, look, we're going to empower people that love meat. So power to the meat lover was born.
Stand up and be counted with
yes.
your meat. You've recently received some funding as well from heavy hitters in Silicon Valley's venture capital community. Tell us about that pitch process as you went out there to these investors and why you think they eventually shelled out money for the project.
Well, you know, I've told people before, the pitch process, going down and meeting with Silicon Valley VCs and angels and even local VCs and angels, especially for a first-time tech founder or any founder that's looking for financing. The way I explain it is it's very similar to learning how to fly an aircraft in the middle of a dogfight. So,
right.
You know, our process was almost filled with almost stuffed with serendipity in that we were able to form a relationship and a bond with several investors very early that had a connection to what we were doing. And, what resonated with them was why hadn't I always thought of connecting some of the things and the bits and the pieces that I have in my offline life with some of the investments that I make online. So in the case of many of the investors, they either were really into barbecue or meat, and some of the others had family members that, you know, had organic farms in Oregon or California or here in Kansas and Nebraska, and they had just never thought about their technology portfolio as one that could connect that way. But understanding their offline lives in the way that they do and then understanding technology in the way they do, our pitch resonated. And it also stood out. One of the things that we heard from several of the VCs and angel investors was that, you know, we get several Pinterest clones come in the door, pitch us. You know, we get several Groupon clones and a lot of mobile gaming, but we never get anything like this that's going to apply to collaborative consumption in real time, in real people's lives and things like that. And there's a trend that a lot of the investors think that, you know, applied technology is going to be the new way. So a lot of them are looking for new plays. And so we fit into that very well.
Tell them how you got over the hump with the whole Kansas City question in Silicon Valley.
You know, I was very steadfast, and I earned the admiration of some advisors of mine who were in the room with me when I was asked the question. Many know in the venture community that typically venture capitalists don't invest in companies unless they can drive to go see the founder every day that they would like to. And so in this case, the inevitable question, knowing that I'm from Kansas City, was, well, you know, where is the company going to be based? And my answer was fast and to the point, Kansas City. You know, that's where I'm from. It's the headquarters of meat. And they liked that. I think they liked the boldness in that and the understanding that, you know, this could end the conversation. But also they understood that, you know, it's Kansas, you know, it's meat. It's, of course, you know, agriculture. And so we have two offices. Our operations office is here in Kansas, like I said. And then we've got some software developers in San Francisco.
Your engineers are actually based in San Francisco, and you chose that two-tiered structure. Why?
you know, San Francisco, Silicon Valley, with the innovation that buzzes around both San Francisco and Silicon Valley, I think more and more people consider San Francisco a part of Silicon Valley now, with more startups moving to the city. But something happens in Silicon Valley where there's just this iron sharpens iron dynamic where your software developers are around other software developers that are also at the top of their game, and it really pushes out innovation and causes you to have a team that's going to be at the top of their game. It also gives you some access to potential engineers that are could be just vested at Twitter. They just got off their stock vesting program, and so we call that the golden handcuffs. So their golden handcuffs are released, and you have access to that engineer who's more mission driven. Said, look, I've made my money in the startups that are already doing well. Now I want to join an early company where I can make more impact and my name can be more well known. And you get these rock star engineers and you get access to them. And so to me, it made a lot of sense to keep the team there. The second thing was we already had engineers working on this. And so they weren't interested in moving to Kansas City as much as I begged.
So you're in a very unique position right now as the founder of Ag Local, in that you're an African-American technology entrepreneur and you're working with agriculture as a traditionally, shall we say, non-African-American profession and not really associated with anything that's really urban other than, really cool people in Converse who like locally grown vegetables. So talk about that dichotomy there that brings your idea together.
You know, something that I've been thinking about a lot lately, actually, is that, sometimes ignorance can be powerful. When you don't know what you're not supposed to be doing,
right?
Sometimes you can do it really right. Well, And in this case, luckily for me, the light bulb didn't go on until we got to this point.
right.
Everybody's like, you're not supposed to be doing this. And to me, it's like you look at back at some of the strongest entrepreneurs, right? And all of them probably were that way. They were just wide-eyed dreamers, and they didn't know they weren't supposed to be doing that. For me, I was working at the Kauffman Foundation and with several of my colleagues before I started Ag Local. We would talk about the abysmal rate of tech founders being minorities, and it was like 1%, maybe even less than 1%. It's especially astounding to me when you consider that we are becoming more and more a service and digital-based economy. So I felt a strong need to go out and found this company based on not wanting to really study it, talk about it. I felt the need to go out and impact materially in this way, which is why I was another reason behind being drawn out to go start the company. I felt that the only way that I could really impact is by going out and standing behind my own passion. The other side of the equation, my wife's family, a lot of people know, are in farming. Her auntie, which was one of our first investors, she's a researcher at Kansas State University of Agriculture, the agriculture department there. And, she said, this is a great idea you have. And she was our first investor, and that really encouraged me. Being someone who's lived in several places all over the world, give me, an expansive view of the world. I never really went into this, even though I had some awareness of how I look physically, obviously. I never went into this looking at the world as opposed to my company and the company's mission through that lens either.
Before we get to the technology piece, which is an especially interesting part of Ag Local in this conversation, have you ever surprised anyone where you're like, yeah, I'm Nathan Jones, founder of Ag Local, where you walked into a room and they had to kind of recover a little bit with their facial expression? And you could tell. Have you ever surprised anyone?
Yeah, it's happened. It's definitely it's happened. Yeah, that's happened. I'd say that's true. but it's cool. I like it. I think more and more you're going to see with the way that. The way that online works, with the way that these tools work that we have access to in the web, and you're just going to see more of an open access to this economy, and you're going to see more and more people like me, and not that I'm anything special. There are lots of people before me, but I definitely was inspired by folks that went out and did the same thing, and I'm humbled, really, to be a part of this and be able to do this, to be able to get up and love the mission of the company and be able to be working on it. I've never been more humbled in my life. I feel almost not worthy almost to be doing it.
So tell us how the technology works. How do you match farmers with meat distributors and wholesalers? How do you do that?
So right now, like, the process is, it's really broken. So, man, it's messed up when you go take a look at it. I knew it had to be broken, but I didn't know it was really this bad. It's really antiquated. This industry's, you know, 40 years behind.
How's it broken?
Well, it's broken in that, you know, the distributors themselves are picking up the phone. They're using spreadsheets. They're, like, trying to get a hold of farms. And then once they get a hold of farms, they're, you know, writing down on a notepad or entering in their spreadsheet. And then they're calling restaurants or grocery stores and they're saying, hey, I've got this. Do you want to buy? Do you want to buy? It's a terribly inefficient process. There's no way to really match pricing across the marketplace. There's no transparency so that there's some kind of, you know, market, some price regulation or price cap across. Ultimately, the farmers have to believe that what these distributors are saying is true, and the distributors have to build in costs to make up for the inefficiencies, right, when they're going out and selling. They also have to pay a sales force to do it. To me, cloud computing, it's almost a perfect case study for cloud computing, because if I go into these distributors and I give them a tool that allows them to match the market real quickly, they are the chief market facilitator. So they're buying at wholesale and they're redistributing retail and they're cutting down the animals for the farms because they have USDA facilities. And so for me, it was like, we built this tool that facilitates and helps these wholesalers. Then we match them with farms and retailers. You've essentially fixed the inefficiencies in this market, and you've also delivered fairness back to the farms.
Does the tool involve input as far as price analytics or pricing comparisons, or is it more of something that you download and find out what's good out there? What is it?
So you're kind of getting into the secret sauce.
All the secret sauce.
That's coming, the analytics, and that's a very important part because people need to know how to, you know, analytically run their business as well as just sell their product. But, you know, in the initial release, what we're doing is we're just connecting the farms to the downstream supply. So we're starting actually at the supply part at the bottom of the market, which is the right now at the restaurants. And you'll probably hear a lot more about this, but we're starting with a campaign where we're bringing in several nationally and globally recognized firms to stand with us on this campaign to help America's restaurants source at least one menu item from a local source or a sustainable farm, and then print that farm story on their menu. And what we'd like to do is take this campaign across the United States and sign up as many restaurants as possible that aren't doing this currently. We call the campaign Eat Clear, and there will be more information about that in the upcoming few weeks. We plan to actually launch the campaign at the American Royal in October, so it should be more on that.
That's a great place to launch any campaign about meat.
Come on. It's perfect.
This is not for someone, to be clear, right now, at least not in this stage. This is not for someone who wants to get a single porterhouse via the internet. This is kind of a B2B approach or business-to-business approach coming out.
It is coming out. But one thing I want to make clear here is, you know, we've had some questions on this, actually, because when we first launched, you know, when we first launched the concept, people said, well, you know, this is a great concept because now allows me to connect personally to a farm. What we found out was actually like what consumers would like is for this to be in places they trust. So grocery stores and restaurants, because that's a place they trust. And so what we found out was by enabling wholesalers to do business on our platform to retailers, that we would essentially be everywhere the consumer is. And so that's the approach we took, and it allows us to scale it to more consumers quickly. You know, going to consumers directly is tough, but being able to go to scale the retailers, you know, and restaurants and grocery stores really allows us to be everywhere the consumer is and allows us to reach ubiquity very quickly.
We have a tweeter on Twitter. Matthew says he sure hopes KC is not meat headquarters. With scarcity, environmental problems, population growth, meat is a luxury we can't forever afford. Now, getting into what he just said, cost. You obviously have to do it by volume. Cost of actually making meat. Have you factored that in? Farmers have a heck of a time with costs, and they pass it on to distributors who in turn have to pass it on to consumers. I mean, it takes a lot just to make a steak.
A lot of that is because of the imbalance,
right.
You know. And let's be clear here. This industry of confinement lots was created to service the fast food industry
right.
in this country.
Right.
Right. And so we're not trying to enable the fast
right.
food industry. They've got
right.
enough. And, you know, your tweeter probably is right when you look at some of the economics, the health issues, and the environmental impact of confinement lots, some of the big confinement lots. It's really terrible. But what we found out now and what we're looking at now, and I'm probably going to release a blog post in the next couple of weeks about this, so look out for that, is that we think the economics behind the fast food movement are going to change and equally fuel a transparent food movement that's going to be an equally important to the economy over the next 40 years, replacing the finances behind the fast food movement. We don't think convenient food will ever go anywhere. Obviously, it's going to be a mainstay. But food awareness and transparency is going to become more than just a peripheral trend for those that are environmentally aware. But it's becoming a mainstream piece of consumer behavior where they want to know where their food comes from. We want to be on the forefront of that. What's important here is that once this awareness becomes mainstream, farms that are closer to the consumers and closer to the businesses that serve them are able to operate in a way that's more profitable and is actually more cost effective and environmentally sound, because they're not using some of the confinement techniques that cause so much damage to the environment. And they're also raising their product in a certain way that enables them to make less impact on the environment. And also, obviously, sustainable financially to their own operation.
So transparent food, clear food. I see what you did with that.
You
transparent,
like that.
Clear food. You're listening to the Central Standard on 89.3 FM, streaming live on KCR.org. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. Our guest is Nathan Jones. He's a co-founder of Ag Local, a technology company that has created a platform to create new markets for animal farmers who want to connect with meat buyers and distributors and streamline the whole local food process, make it transparent from the top to bottom. You said that this model works because farmers don't have time to sell door-to-door to wholesalers and distributors. How does Ag Local streamline that process?
So we become a market-matching tool. In some essence, you know, we almost become like an Etsy meets LinkedIn meets Amazon type of thing, where we're like all of those tools for farms to distributors, so where they can make connections with a social layer. You know, they can meet the market based upon demand. And so the reason why we wanted to start this by building from demand up is that, you know, qualified demand is a whole lot more relevant than just, you know, some website where I'm building a profile. So starting up and saying, look, we've got, you know, 1,000 restaurants, which is our overall goal, by the way, to say that they want to source one menu item locally from you and being able to offer that up to the farms. That's real. I mean, those are real dollars. And so we make that connection.
Speaking of real dollars, what is your early revenue model for this business? I understand that you don't actually make money taking a cut off the actual transactions of the meat between the farmers and distributors. So what's your pricing point here?
Actually, it is. We are going to be taking a transaction fee from the buyer in this
from
situation.
The buyer. Yes. From the buyer. So on the restaurant side.
On the wholesaler
or the wholesaler
side.
Or restaurant side,
yeah.
not charging the farmers
no.
a cut of that.
That's right. No, we're not.
So on each transaction, that's the deal from the buyer side.
Yes, that's right.
You're also trying to bring down the cost of locally produced meats for the end users, restaurants. You just mentioned the buyer side and the rare meat happy bulk consumers, et cetera, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Talk about that.
So, you know, with this efficiency that we're building in, over time, what's going to happen is the economics behind this is going to change. You know, it's kind of crazy in that the cow is worth more right now to the consumer before it goes into the feedlot for 3 months at the end of its life.
Wow.
But the consumers are saying, you know, this cow that you raised for 15 months on grass, now you're going to stuff it full of hormones for 3 months and grains and all these other things that make it sick. The corn makes it sick. So they have to have antibiotics and all these other things. But what's crazy, again, is that a lot of the processors have, you know, contracts with feedlots. It's a very interwoven ecosystem to produce this meat. So now what we're seeing pop up, and actually the USDA has been involved because they see the economics could help the farmers. And so, you know, congratulations to them that they're now looking at this. But is that There are smaller processors, independent processors, even mobile processors that are willing to take these cows, you know, take these animals, these pigs, these chickens, and process them and get them to the market very quickly before they have to go through that process. So, you know, this is really starting to emerge beyond just a peripheral trend. This is becoming mainstream, and so we are really excited.
So in other words, speaking of the process, Ag Local is not in the business of selling pink slime or lean beef trimmings, as we've been hearing a lot about.
Oh, no. There will be no slime
on
the network.
No pink slime. You're still in the seed funding and expansion stage.
Yes.
What happens next for Ag Local? What are your rollout plans from here forward?
So we'll do a small market test in San Francisco in October. We plan to follow on very quickly behind that here in Kansas City. From the eClear campaign, we'll take some of that data around what markets are really participating in the campaign, and we'll choose from that list on which cities we go to after that. Obviously, the eClear campaign ties in very heavily with our platform in general. We have a suspicion that it'll be cities like Chicago, you know, New York, obviously, Seattle, some, you know, other cities like that, but we'll wait to see.
What does the market test entail? What are you looking for?
We're looking for engagement. You know, we're looking for signups, not just signups from the restaurants, but true engagement, you know, through the partners that we're going to bring on board. So, you know, for them to submit their menu item, tell us a little bit about themselves, and then let us have a conversation, a dialogue with them. What we found out from this business is when you're doing an online meets offline type business, is that it's not as simple as a mobile game. You can't just, you know, send out an email. You actually have to go and meet people and shake their hands physically and build trust. So that's what has to happen. And so we have to have true engagement in these cases.
And your business is truly a bricks and mortar meets clicks and mortar type deal. So talk about that engagement of the sort of Internet of Things business model, network of things.
Yeah.
Talk about that.
So, you know, Lisa Gansky writes a good book called The Mesh about, you know, collaborative consumption. And so I read that book right before, you know, right around the time I was founding the company. And, you know, what I find interesting with this new generation of technology in San Francisco, they've got this technology called Uber, where you can click on your phone. And what it does is it finds a town car driver that is, you know, not busy at the moment and can come pick you up for the almost a little bit more than a taxi fare. But, you know, picks you up on your GPS, finds you. So it's using latent capacity that isn't being used in the market, right? So like Airbnb, which is a bed and breakfast for people's homes, where people can go, you can go on Airbnb and you can rent a room in someone's house and it's a bed and breakfast. And so that the owner of the house makes money. You possibly make a new relationship should you like that person. And you rented a house in somewhere really awesome, like San Francisco, $30 a night in someone's, you know. San Francisco hotels are $400 a night. But what that's doing, right, what these technologies are doing is they're taking latent capacity and they're reusing it. So they're recycling value back into the economy, right? And so I think, you know, with this online meets offline, what it really is a repurposing of latent capacity. So these farms, some of the independents and family-run farms, they could scale their farms up to 3 to 4 times their size. But the only buyer at that point would be really large, mechanized corporate buyers.
Like a Cargill or Archer Daniels Midland or somebody like that.
I didn't say any names.
Yeah, but those are the types of buyers we're talking about. But
they are.
There is a lingering question here that I have, as well as one of our listeners, Randy. I'm going to break your heart right now.
Okay.
I no longer eat meat. So what Randy is wondering, along with myself, is does Ag Local plan to go beyond meat?
You're getting back into the secret sauce, man.
Getting back
I can't
into the
get
secret.
Away
so,
from you. I can't avoid
some,
you.
Somewhere in the future, there will be vegetables and perhaps fish.
We likely will never do produce and vegetables.
Right.
I will declare right now we will not do that. That space is being covered very well by quite a few different startups and established businesses, and I use a few of them myself. We won't ever do that. But what we will likely do.
Raise fish,
scale,
maybe?
No.
Raise fish, brother?
Some fish. Do a fish fry. Yeah, some catfish.
Right.
But what we will likely do is animal byproducts once we scale. When that means like your milk, cheese, eggs.
But not pink slime.
But no pink slime.
All right. Our guest is Nathan Joan, co-founder of Ag Local, a technology company, a well-funded technology company that has created a platform to create new markets for animal farmers who want to connect with meat buyers and distributors. You heard him. No pink slime. Thank you for coming, Nathan Jones.
Thanks for having me.
And tune in tomorrow as we visit the studio of legendary artist Jim Leedy, whose name is literally synonymous with the local art scene, and we take a sneak peek at a new documentary about his life. Our show is produced by Andrea Salenzi, who will soon be leaving to join Black Entertainment Television, that's right, BET, where she will be the executive producer of a new dance show called Back It Up and Drop It Like You Stole Something. Up to Date is next with TEDxKC speaker Shai Reshef to tell us about the University of People. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.